comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. And there's no better way to start the new week than to start it together right here with a brand new week of nightly excursions into the world of the strange and the unexplained. Wouldn't you agree? So wherever you happen to be, whether it's whether we should say good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever time it is where you are, welcome. We're glad you're here. Speaking of excursions into the world of the strange and the unexplained, we publish a newsletter called The K-Files, and it's absolutely free. If you're not getting it, be sure you get over to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe, and then you'll start getting it. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and, you know, we don't lend or lease or rent or sell that email list to anybody for any other purpose. It's just for the K-Files. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed. We'd love to see you in the subscriber family. We'd also love to see you in our members community. The members community is growing, and the members community features continue to grow. And we have more new stuff coming, but what we have right now is pretty phenomenal. You know, at a lot of shows, you get into their archives if you pay. Well, that's where our archives are. It's in our paid sections, in our members' community. But there's so much more there. That's where the forums are. That's where the chat room is. You get your own blog, your own video album, so you can upload your own videos. And so, you know, if you got a video of a ghost sighting, or if you got a video that you shot of a UFO, you got a place to put it right there. Of course, messaging to friends. You get your own friends page. You get Video Galaxy with lots of videos to watch. And, it just, you know, the list just goes on and on and on and on and on. And from time to time, we throw in, as a gift, just totally as a gift, special broadcasts just for the members. So if you're not a member, nobody but you can fix it. It's $7.50 a month. That's only 25 cents a day. So if you're not a member, join tonight, okay? I hope you'll do that, and then you'll discover that the world of The Kevin Smith Show is so much bigger than you thought it was. And, you know, you get to listen for free every night. But you could be watching if you're a member. If you are a member, you can watch this show live every night. And if you happen to miss it, well, we capture the video of it, and you get to... you get to watch the show for the next 24 hours. But the archives, well, that's there forever. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with Gordon Giannotto right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Gordon Giannotto. Gordon has been with us a number of times, and we've talked about a lot of different topics, and tonight we're going to talk about one we haven't talked about before. I have, we're going to be talking about the moon, and we're going to be talking about some spectacular photography of the moon, and I'll be showing a few examples of it. So I've talked about the moon on a number of occasions, many, many, many times, as a matter of fact. However, Gordon and I have not discussed the moon and its anomalies previously, but we're going to do that tonight, and we have another topic we're hopefully going to get to as well. We will see. Gordon, welcome back to the show. I'm glad to have you back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Kevin, and you always do a wonderful show, and I'm very proud to be on your show again, so thank you.
All right, thank you. Gordon has viewed, and in fact, Gordon was on another radio show this afternoon talking about the movie that has been released by Jose Escamilla called Celestial. Now, our audience will remember, those of you who have been listening for a period of time, you'll remember that while Jose was still working on this movie, while he was making this movie, we had him on and he shared with us some clips, and we were all excited about what was coming because they were just phenomenal clips. But for those of you who missed it, let me tell you, let me set this up for you. You always see black and white pictures of the moon. You never, ever see color pictures of the moon. Even if they show you a color picture so that you can see, for instance, there are astronauts on the moon and you can see the red, white, and blue on their emblem and so forth. They have the moon as white against a black sky. Always. They never show color. However, did you know that NASA has, NASA shot color pictures, as well as some military missions shot color pictures, and they are not housed at NASA. They are housed at the USGS. U.S. Geological Survey, and they are in full color. Now, in Celestial, I know there are a lot of people who say, well, the moon is not color. Yes, it is. It is many colors, and you will see some of that tonight. But it's not black and white. It is not, period. It is not black and white. All right, lots of people don't realize that, and many more of us wonder, then why is that the way they always show it to us? I don't know. But these color photographs exist. They are at the USGS, so everything we see tonight, everything we talk about tonight, these are official photographs from the USGS, from their archives. And they are included, actually, in the movie Celestial, which Jose Escamilla has done. It's a fabulous movie. All right, so Gordon, let me get your general, I've given my opinion of the movie. What's your general opinion of this movie?
It's an absolute must-see. It should win documentary award after documentary award, and it was not done just by Jose, but the credits list about 300 people, and the amount of work that went into making this one-hour, not-to-be-missed documentary about the moon, it's just going to blow everyone's mind. And personally, there's no way that you can watch this movie and come away thinking there's no such thing as extraterrestrials on the moon.
Well, that's true.
Whether you don't believe in extraterrestrials, so you don't think they're on the moon, think anything's happening on the moon now because it's all in the ancient past, perhaps, that's totally inaccurate. This is it's just a mind-boggling, and not only that, but the music is really beautiful. They went out of reflective different musical tracks for the score. So it's like a spiritual experience, but it has to blow your mind. If you have ever thought, well, there couldn't possibly be extraterrestrials, and they couldn't possibly be on the moon, and they couldn't possibly be doing something there right now, boy, you've got to see this movie. And you've got to see this movie no matter who you are, because it's unlike anything that you've seen before. And if I were handing out awards, I would hand it out 10 awards just so it would get more recognition.
I agree with everything you said. In this movie, one of the things, Gordon, that's really impressive is there's an amateur astronomer. I think he's in Texas. And
Bill, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And he is shooting color photographs and video of the moon with his own telescope and his own camera. And they show you his telescope and what camera he's using. And he says, I don't know why the astronomers and other people don't shoot color pictures, and why don't they tell people? Because you can see it yourself. You can see the colors yourself.
Well, the whole story is so remarkable. This man, obviously with some cash, bought the top-of-the-line Celestron telescope to look at the face of the moon. You know, the same face of the moon always faces the Earth. And, he wanted to look at it. So then he said, well, he ordered all these extremely high-end cameras that hook up to the Celestron telescope, and not a single one of them was in high resolution. They were taking awful pictures. And somebody said, one of his friends said, why don't you go to Best Buy and buy the Logitech 1080 high-definition webcam and hook that up to the telescope. And it's a great story. It cost almost nothing compared to everything else he had spent. Mm-hmm. And here he gets these incredible high-definition movies of the face of the moon in color. And you're right, Kevin. The color is just mind-boggling, because on any day you go out and you can see the moon, you look at it, and pretty much your whole world around you looks like it's in color, and you look up at the moon, and for some reason it seems like it's in black and white. But it's not. And,
no.
This film is going to show you what's going on up there in a way that you never imagined you could see. And not only is he got pictures for this guy in Texas with his telescope, but he got the Chinese satellite pictures. And the Chinese, they don't care what NASA wants to cover up or keep from the public. And not emphasizing it, but they're taking the pictures and they're releasing them. And the same is true of the European Space Administration, ESA, their satellite, ESA, their satellite, and they're not covering it up. They're not listening to NASA. They're taking pictures. And let me tell you, when you compare them to the pictures that NASA has shown us, shame on you, NASA. Shame on you, shame on you, shame on you.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Really, that whole thing about the clarity, or lack thereof, of NASA pictures, when people in their backyard can get better pictures than NASA releases to us, when we're talking about the moon, and that's another show. And,
and there's another thing that I'd like to mention. I haven't mentioned this in years, but, for years, Kodak was selling black and white film, and most professional photographers would go buy Kodak black and white film, and it came in three different speeds, and it recorded, let's say, a range of 10, a factor of 10, so something that was 10 times better than something else, it could capture them on the same picture. So you had to center your exposure into the middle of that range, but you could get a factor of 10 times. Well, it turns out Kodak invented a special film that the astronauts took to the moon, and it wasn't released to the public for nearly 25 years. And it recorded a range, and this is just black and white film, it recorded a range of 100 times. So something was better than something else. They all came out perfectly on the same picture. And yeah. this is really released as this Max film, they call it.
Yeah.
Which now we're going digital, so nobody really cares, but.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because film is a whole lot more reliable.
Oh, and they have beautiful film that takes infrared pictures, but try and buy it now. You need government Homeland Security permission to buy an infrared.
To buy infrared film?
No, well, it's infrared film for sale anywhere. I'd like to know where you get it, but the cameras, like Fuji has this incredible high definition infrared camera. You need permission from the Department of Homeland Security to buy it, and you better have a good reason, because obviously there's things the government does not want you to see that obviously you can see if you have a camera. So
mm-hmm.
you know, this it all goes back, this, you know, you could say on the one hand this whole movie is showing you how NASA has lied to you from day one. It's just that simple. And there's so many things. You know,
which one of the astronauts is it that came back from the moon and became a painter, and he actually put out a book of paintings about showing scenes on the moon? Do you remember which one that was?
No, I would have liked to have seen that book, but I never have. No.
But it was in color, and he was asked about that because his pictures are in color, and he said that he was trying to capture the emotion of the colors on the moon.
Yeah, and when you see this movie, you're going to see crater after crater after crater that has the most beautiful azure turquoise blue in the crater. Now, is that water? Probably. And is it liquid? Would probably ice, but there it is, just sitting, most beautiful, extraordinary. Everywhere you look, there are craters that are filled with a blue color, and what else could that be?
Well, I want us to talk about some of these pictures. Now, some of what we're going to talk about, I don't have the picture of, but those who are watching will see some of the pictures that we are going to talk about. And I want to go to this picture of a statue. Now, in the movie, folks, and it's not something that looks like a statue. It's a statue. You can see that. If you zoom in on it, you can really see it. This in the movie, they go through the process of determining how large this statue is.
Yeah.
And it turns out, what is it, like 6 miles high?
Yeah, it's just something unfast. It's so huge. And you've got to understand the gravity of the moon is 1/6 of the gravity of Earth. So maybe you can get somebody like the guy who carved Mount Rushmore. Maybe you could make a block of foam 6 miles high and carve it easily. I don't know. I don't know whether it could be cast, or it's a structure covered like the Statue of Liberty. It's got a bunch of steel, and then it's covered with copper plates. Nobody has any idea what it is. And not only that, it's not clear enough to see exactly what it is. But to me, it looks like an adult holding, possibly a big woman, maybe a man, holding what looks like a big-headed child. So maybe it's a gray alien, and then off to the side it looks like there's a little dwarf. It might be Casper the Ghost looking up at the two of them. I mean, this is something that there is no mistaking, that there is a statue the likes of which probably couldn't even be possible to create on Earth.
It goes without saying, there's not going to be a 6 mile structure of any kind vertical. Not
right.
On Earth.
And is it stone? Is it metal? Is it made out of helium-3? Is it made out of ice? I mean, you just don't know, but there it is. This is clearly, and they have several pictures from different different angle. It's clearly a statue on the surface of the moon. And if you notice how huge it is, and there doesn't seem to be anything else in proportion to that around it. So it's something that was intended to stand for the ages and be prominent and make a statement. But what's the statement? Well, that gets into the whole subject of the Google X Prize. The Google has offered a prize, $20 million, for the team that sends a rover to the moon that does, completes a checklist, or whatever that is. And 23 teams were certified. Most of them are private universities. Few of them are corporations. But there are right now, as we're speaking, 23 teams in the United States working on building a rover to go to the moon. And, you know, it's like that story that you're told as a child where I think it's the rabbit goes, "Don't put me in the briar patch. Oh, no, don't put me in the briar patch." And, of course, that's where he wants to be put. And so the villain thinks, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put him in the briar patch. And, of course, that's how he escapes. So if I had one of those rovers, Kevin, I can tell you right now, I would head right for something like this. I mean, there's no question about it. You know?
But NASA see, is this right here, this statue, screams a lot of things. But the number one thing it screams is that either right now or at some time in the past, there has been an intelligent presence on the moon that's not us.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, you know, we don't know what that statue is. And there are other pictures. I mean, people have gone through astronauts' pictures. And see, back then, they just took thousands and thousands of pictures, and they would have to have hired thousands of people to go take out the UFOs, the glass structures, the ruins of buildings, and they actually did hire some to take out prominent things that you can see in the picture were, at best, clumsily retouched. So you looking at this picture, everything sharp is attacked, and then you get to this one area, and it's like a giant pyramid is sort of wiped out with a sponge. It's like, give me a break. Who could possibly think that wasn't retouched? I mean, yeah. It screams, I've been retouched. But there were thousands and thousands of pictures, and I don't think they ever imagined that people would actually go back and go to these archives. As Jose went through, they're filed according to the Apollo mission through Apollo 17, and
well, yeah, I don't think they expected it. All right, look, we have to step away for a break. And when we come back, we'll be discussing some more of these pictures and phenomenal stuff in Celestial.
Smith Show, a place where you can get information that's out of this world.
All right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest, Gordon Giannotto, and we're talking about this phenomenal movie called Celestial. By the way, if you haven't seen the movie, don't do it right now. Stick with the show here because there's more great information coming up. But if you go to my website and you click, just scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, right under it, it says Show Info. Click that link because it will pop open a window and with information about tonight's show. And there is a link in that window to Celestial. You can click it and watch the whole thing, and you will just be amazed at what you see. And the more you watch it, the more you see, don't you think, Gordon?
Oh, I watched it several times, and I can't get enough of it. And I want to get back to these rovers, because 6 months ago, NASA did something that was completely strange. I mean, it was so odd. They said, when these rovers go to the moon, don't you dare go near any of the Apollo landing sites.
Yeah.
So, okay. They said, well, these are historical, and we don't want them to get dust on them. Of course, they've been sitting there for, what, 42 years? And what have they been doing, accumulating dust? So, but they said particularly, they gave a distance. They said, you know, whatever it was, 100 yards to each Apollo landing site, except for Apollo 11 and 17. Apollo 11, they want you to stay, and I forget what that distance is, but let's say a quarter of a mile. And Apollo 17, they want you to stay like half a mile. So people were puzzling over this. Why? You know, because there's a treaty. Nobody owns the moon.
Right.
If you go to the moon with your rover, you can get anywhere you want. There isn't anybody to say you can't. So why would NASA say, and what power do they have to enforce this? Why would they say stay away from 11 and 17? And finally, we all figured it out. They landed in the midst of alien ruins, and if those rovers go near 11 and 17, they're going to risk that 70X, NASA has clearly known about extraterrestrials and lied to the public since then.
Well, I think that's entirely possible. I know it is true that NASA knows a great deal more about extraterrestrials than they tell us. And I think what you're saying, your theory about 11 and 17, I think that's possibly true. And, in fact, I think it's probably true. And it'll be very interesting. But here's what power they have. If those companies are American companies that send rovers up there, then NASA has the power of money. And that is government grants that help these companies get their stuff built and get to the moon, launch licenses, launch permits, so they can get off of the ground here. All of that NASA can mess up for them.
Oh, I'm sure. But the thing is they did this 6 months ago. Just the other day, they re-announced it. Go anywhere you want on the moon, but don't go near the Apollo landing sites. And in particular, don't go anywhere near 11 and 17. It's like, how can you forget that? I don't think I'll ever be able to do the Apollo flights without wondering what in the hell is going on at the 11 and 17 landing sites.
Well, when some of these other space agencies like the Chinese or the Indians or the Japanese or the Russians get their rovers on the moon, you know exactly where they're going to head.
Exactly. And we just launched a rover to Mars, the Curiosity, and you've got to ask yourself, well, why are we, if the country's broke, there's not enough food, we can't pay for fuel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the problems that we all know we're living with every day, how come we're spending $2 billion on a rover going to Mars? And the thinking is that NASA has, from the very first, not been interested in science, because we're naive sheep. We think that NASA is trying to extend the frontiers of science. How wonderful, aren't we glad there's some people interested in pure scientific research. And in fact, what I've come to believe is that it's been planned from the beginning to get the elite off the Earth, Moon or Mars, and then bring them back after pole shift and have them be kings of the Earth. Now, I've discussed pole shift on other shows, so I'm not going to discuss that right now.
Yeah, but well, that's good, because we got some more pictures to get to.
Right, but we just sent a $2 billion rover to Mars, and the inside story, the thinking about that is that's to discover life on Mars, whether it's a seashell or bacteria, and alien ruins, which we can plainly see from this movie exist on the moon, and then get funding for a Mars mission, maybe send 20 men to Mars. But the trillionaire would fund 50 more spaceships that we wouldn't know about that would take the elite to Mars to escape pole shift. So that's a conspiracy. You can make of it what you will, but it's very interesting. We're about to send 23 rovers to the moon, and we've already sent a huge rover to Mars. So you can place your bets right now that we are about to hear in the news, whether it's a month, 3 months, 6 months, or a year, we are about to hear some really big revelations about at least Mars Moon as well.
All right, let's go back to Celestial and the Moon, and this is picture number two, Gordon. And ladies and gentlemen who are watching, you're looking at a picture which, when you see Celestial, the label that will come up on the screen says Gold Hills or Gold Mountains. And it is very interesting. I mean, this doesn't look like the moon we see when we stand on the surface of the Earth and look at the moon with the naked eye. There's a, you know, definitely bright golden hue to this area. And there are lots of big spots on this area where you have just bright white, looks like light all over it. But then there's something really curious. Now, Gordon, I don't know, do you have that, you have picture number two up
yes,
in
I,
front of you?
Yes.
Gordon, take yes, a look. Take a look in the upper right-hand corner of this picture.
Yeah, it looks like the edge of a crater, except it's not circular.
Ah, look at the blue item.
Exactly, blue.
Do you see the blue item up there?
Well, the first thing that strikes me when I look at the picture is all the green. Now, you know, green is
well,
dark green.
Hang on. I think we're looking. I told you look at picture number two, but it's actually yours are numbered. That will be three.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it, and it's a spectacular picture. It's the kind of picture of the moon that nobody's ever seen before, and that's why you have to look at this movie. It looks like there's clouds in an atmosphere streaking over a terrain that looks like some of the night astronaut pictures of Earth lit up by cities.
Okay.
And then you've got this blue object in the upper right-hand corner.
Well, we're going to zoom in on that blue object. And this blue object that we're now looking at appears to be not on the surface, but in the air above the surface. And it's roughly shaped like the old Telstar satellite.
Exactly. And this is what this movie is going to do is whet your appetite for more, because just explain some of these things that you're looking at. I mean, I live in Maine. I've got a 34 acre blueberry field. I'm drowning in berries right now, and for all I know, that's a blueberry, or it's a juniper berry, or it's a space satellite, or it's a spire with a huge sphere on the top of it. I mean, but whatever it is, it isn't the moon that we've grown up with.
No, it isn't. I don't know. Whatever that is, it's not a crater. It looks manufactured, and it appears to be above the surface.
And why not, considering all the rest of the things that you see in the movie?
Yeah, really? Really? Well, what do you think about this, what he calls the gold hills or the gold mountains? Do you think this is actually gold? Or is it just a description?
I skipped that because I have to think that the Anunnaki on Planet X would have come along and take much of it as they could. I had asked Nancy Leader, because she said that the Anunnaki had laboratories on the moon where they took apes and they mixed the DNA to get the various experiments, and then they planted them on the Earth and watched them run around and see how well they did, and they finally got us, modern man, just smart enough apes, just stupid enough not to know that we were not our God. So they made us gold, mine gold. So I have to think that it were gold. But I'm thinking this is a huge populated area of lights. That's my first reaction. I mean, yes, it could be gold. It could be. I actually live near a gold mine that's now a Superfund site, so they're going to cover every interesting thing about it up with clay and seal it, and nobody will ever see it before. But I've been there 20 years ago, and I picked up pieces of ore that aren't gold, but have the most beautiful golden hues. I don't know whether it's zirconium or beryllium or, you know, what it is, but there were a lot of metal in these mines. So, but it's clear that this is not just a dry desert area with nothing happening.
Well, if that is, look, folks, when you watch the movie, it will have even more of an appearance of a populated area. This is a still shot. It's just one screen capture here, one frame. But when you see it, it appears that you're flying over a populated area where it's lit up. Now, if you compare that to what it looks like on Earth when you fly over a populated area, and those who are watching are seeing a shot right now of what that looks like, you know, it doesn't look all that different from what we expect to see right here on Earth.
I mean, that could be a coastline, that could be the North Sea, that could be Europe, to the right could be Russia. I mean, this could be the Earth. And I'll tell you, I have hundreds of photographs, and I didn't try and send all of them to you, but years and years and years ago, an Earth-based astronomer was taking a picture of a crater, and a cloud came along, and he goes, no way, and he takes a picture of it. Then the next picture, the cloud is covering the crater, and you can see it. And then the next picture, the cloud has moved on. So there have always been rumors that there is an atmosphere on the moon, that it has been found to contain methane, that there is wind or clouds. Now, there's probably not any rain or even snow because of the temperature. But the fact that there could be clouds, that's not so unbelievable. And when I look at this picture that we're discussing, I don't know that I'm not looking at high clouds over that area. I mean, it looks to me like I'm watching the Weather Channel.
Well, especially the left side of the picture, it looks like clouds, high, thin clouds there. But the rest of that area looks like a lit-up population area, as you would see it if you flew over it at nighttime. And I'm not, folks, I'm not saying that's what it is, but I am saying that's what it looks like. It has that appearance. All right, we have to step away for a break, and we've got a few more pictures we're going to talk about. And again, if you have not seen Celestial, I've made it possible. Be sure you watch it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and we're talking with Gordon Giannotto this evening. And we're talking about some of what you will see in the movie Celestial. It is phenomenal. And as Gordon says, I think you will agree, too, when you see it, this really ought to win every documentary award that for every category it qualifies for. This is phenomenal. Jose Escamilla has outdone himself here. And yes, there are many other people who helped make this happen. But at the top of the pile, the guy that put it all together, Jose Escamilla. And he has really outdone himself here. So you really ought to see this. And it doesn't cost you anything to see it. I made a mistake by saying as we went to break that I've made it possible for you to see it. That's not exactly correct. I've made it simple for you to see it. Jose Escamilla has made it possible for you to see it. He's made it where we can link to it and you can watch it. But look, all you have to do is you go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. Under it, you see a link that says show info. And that's where we always have information about the show we're doing. When you click that, you're going to see a link to Celestial. So right after the show tonight, watch Celestial. You'll be honestly very glad you did. All right, Gordon, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this thing that looks like a city with lights on?
No, but, you know, I mean, not much except to say that for all we know, it could be a city. I mean, what do we know? But, you know, just go to the next picture. I mean, that's a whole story and a half by itself. This large object on the edge of a crater, and it looks like somebody pulled somebody's tooth and just threw it out onto the table or onto the ground or something. But it's not a tooth. It's a structure. And it was photographed under construction by Apollo 16. Now, this is where the story gets really interesting. This particular shot that you've got here on the screen, this is a shot not by the Apollo, but this is later. This is now. This is I believe it's the Chinese satellite picture of it. But Apollo 16 flew over it and took a picture where it's centered in the picture. And Jose found that in the Apollo 16 archives. Then they flew over it with Apollo 17 and took basically the same shot where it's centered in the picture. And construction was completed. So there was 8 months between Apollo 16 and Apollo 17. Jose measures this using, you know, a scale of known craters and laying the image against known objects and then measuring it. And he says that this object is a structure that is 6 miles, 10 miles.
Okay, you're gonna have to say that again because somebody's messing with your audio. I haven't said anything about it, but all the way through.
6 miles by 10 miles. There it is. 6 miles by 10 miles. Is it the entrance to a mining tunnel? Is it a spaceship assembly center? I mean, what can you build in a building that's 6 miles by 10 miles?
Well, I have zoomed in on it now, and I don't know if you're watching, but we've zoomed in, and you can clearly see some type of machinery on the left side of that structure, and you can see some kind of building on the left side of that structure, some rectangular L-shaped structure back there. So who knows what it is? But now let me ask you, are you able at this point to watch the show while we're doing the show?
No, because I wouldn't be able to cut the audio out, and I'd be having a delay, so it wouldn't be prudent. But I can tell you that I have a lot of experience with construction. I mean, I'm having a 200-foot tower put up on my mountaintop right here, and it's for the U.S. Coast Guard. So I've seen, and this to me looks like some sort of a gigantic crane that you see at a shipyard, and it looks like it's got an extended arm. It looks like a robot you would see in a car factory that welds the bodies of the cars to the frame. And it looks like there's some sort of a building maybe that operates that crane to the left. And then there's this giant, it looks to me like a tooth.
Yeah,
I see the roots of the tooth. I see the crown of the tooth. And it's just laying on its side on the edge of this crater. Which it's hard to tell that is an edge of a crater from this particular photograph. But if you look past the building to the right, you see that the land actually curves around there. And it curves around in the foreground to the right. And so the crater goes from the center of the picture to the right. You only see maybe a third or half the crater. And on the lip of it, sort of laying up against the lip at a funny angle, which you have to agree that's a funny angle, is this giant structure. What is it?
Well, in this particular shot, you've described it very well, but there's one other thing that catches my eye, and that is on the right side of what you're saying looks like a tooth laying on its side. On the right side of that, there's something moving.
Yeah, and it looks like dust, maybe. Like there's something's happening there. Maybe there's a vehicle going into the entrance, and it's leaving a cloud of dust behind it. Or maybe they're drilling right there, or blasting. I mean, science has always said, and see, I don't really understand it very well, but supposedly the moon is covered with helium-3, and just, this isn't accurate, but it's just to give you an idea, a teaspoon of it could power the United States for a year. So if there is any great rush to get to the moon, it's to get helium-3. And the thought was, if we could build a space station on the moon, we could refuel all of our spaceships and go from the moon to anywhere we want.
Well, it may be helium-3, but it's actually, if you could fill the payload bay of a shuttle with helium-3, that would power the United States for a year. But that's not much. That's a small amount.
If the moon's covered with it, can you imagine how that would change life on Earth?
Oh, man. That would be fantastic. Now, the Chinese have said unequivocally they are going to the moon to mine helium-3.
Yeah.
So, you know, but this is not them. This is not their mining operation.
And it begs the question, why haven't we gone back to the moon since 1969? Why, haven't we done anything? And then the movie even gets into that. And I don't know when you want to start discussing that building with the number 2 on it, but that opens up a can of worms all by itself.
It does. And let me ask you this. Do you know, we'll discuss it now, but do you know in relationship to this amazing structure where we can see the crane. That's a crane. All right, we see it, and we see this structure that's 6 miles by 10 miles. That's a big crane, and that's a big structure. All right, how far and in what direction would we have to go to get to that building that has a 2 on the top?
I'm sorry, I don't understand that, but. Kevin looked for it and he wasn't able to snip it out of the movie, but when you watch this movie, you are going to see something that will just, the best way to describe it is you're probably going to fall out of your chair, because there on the moon is a building, and on the roof clearly is the English language Arabic numeral 2, and who likes to number all their buildings except the U.S. government? So,
yeah, I did look for it. But look, do you know in which direction?
No, I don't.
Yeah. But
the thing to remember from this movie is almost everywhere he looked, there's something going on like this.
Yeah.
Just it's the moon is replete with projects. And you know, we didn't see any like little vehicles running around, or anybody in spacesuits or little dump trucks or something like that. You see these huge things that seem stationary, but you don't know. Could they move? Do they move? Are things going in and out of it? Is that a tunnel entrance? Is that just sitting there? Is it a landed spaceship that they're trying to fix, and they've spent 30 years fixing it? You don't know, but you do know one thing. That object is not natural anywhere.
Yeah, whatever that is, geology didn't build that.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's see how much time we've got. Yeah, we're almost to our next break. So we'll back on out and head off to the next break here in just a second. And when we come back, we've got one or two more pictures from the moon, probably just one more, and then we're going to be talking about the dark twin and a picture of it. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome to the second hour of tonight's show. And those of you who are joining us just now in the second hour, I'm delighted you're here and you have my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that has kept you away from that first hour. Because we have been talking about some fabulous stuff, and those of you who are watching the show have been seeing it and are, I would say, no doubt, awestruck by the photography. These are official pictures. By official, I mean that they're straight from the archives of the USGS. These are real. You can go there and see them yourselves, but Jose Escamilla also has a library of these pictures, with each of them labeled exactly as you would find them at those archives, and so you can see them at his site as well. We're talking this evening with Gordon Giannotto, and he has seen Celestial, the movie that these photographs have come from, and as we went away from break, we were talking about, Gordon, a building on the moon that's very clear. You can see it absolutely very clear, a building, and it has a gigantic numeral 2 on the top of it. So describe that scene for us. Describe what you see in that picture. Well, which, by the way, folks, I don't have that picture. It is in the movie, and you will see it.
It's remarkable because it's just like somebody had one of those letterpress things that architects use to put lettering on drawings, and somebody just put the number 2 on the top of this building. And the building is, a typical uninspired rectangular government building. It's not 6 miles by 10 miles, but it is big enough to have a gigantic 2 on the top of it, which begs the question, where is number 1? And is there a number 3, 4, or 5?
Yeah.
So, you know, you get into these stories where, like in the Serpo story that, you know, a lot of people don't believe, but I don't think it's quite true the way it was written, but yet I think there's some truth to it, because there are stories that the United States has been to other planets. And one of the most interesting recent clues is this Gary McKinnon, who the U.S. wants to extradite from the U.K., and the U.K. is holding back. But he broke into, by hacking, into the Pentagon and came across a list of off-Earth Navy ships and the list of the crew on the ships and their pay scales. And I guess that was in a lesser secured section of the Pentagon computer files. But that's why they want to get them back, and you can bet they want to put them in solitary, or maybe they want to do what happened to Wilhelm Reich, and as soon as they put him in jail, an auto thief stabbed him to death. So, but anyway, luckily the UK, and you can look this guy up and what he says, the UK has so far refused to send Gary McKinnon back. But that's interesting, because if you've heard of Area 51, that's a U.S. Navy installation. So you think, well, ships, ocean, the Navy, they're limited to the Earth, aren't they? But you've got to realize that, I guess, early on, they carved out a little niche for themselves, saying, if it's a ship, it's a U.S. Navy ship. So, and then you have these stories.
Well, the Navy has always been the premier military service as far as the U.S. government is concerned. The Constitution originally provided only for 2 services, and that's the Army and the Navy. And the Navy, from the beginning, has gotten the lion's share of military budget, and they still do.
Exactly, and is some of it being spent out in space? And then you have recent stories, and I don't know what to make of them, but I'm quite interested. You know, like, but this lawyer named Andrew Bisaggio. And he says that he was part of a special project where they had a jump room and they would regularly go to Mars. And one of the other people that was selected to go with him was a young Barack Obama. Well, you know the president's never going to admit that, but you know, these kinds of things get you thinking. And then if you go to Zeta Talk, they say, well, there was a military experiment where they put people just sort of like the Serpo story, they put people on the dark twin of the Earth, the Moon, and Mars. And, of course, these were with selfish aliens, and these were bases. And the people were doing horribly. They hated it because there was no culture, there was no sociology, they couldn't go outside. I mean, you can go outside for a few minutes in the day on Mars, you can't, like, take a walk at night. And the Moon, you definitely can't. So, you know, are any of these stories true? Well, when you see a building on the Moon labeled number 2, that gives credence to the whole range of conspiracy stories that, yes, the United States has been in space on other bodies other than Earth since 1962.
And okay, well, let's do this last picture, and then we're going to get to that dark twin of Earth and kind of go to school a little bit. Now, the picture that we're looking at, let's see, yours will be labeled 5. And what we see, we're looking from above down on top of, frankly, it looks to me like Machu Picchu. It's right up on top of a mountain, and it's leveled off, and there's some building up on top of that mountain. We'll see here if I can make this zoom in. But talk to us about this. What are we looking at here?
Well, once again, it's hard to say what we're looking at, but to me, I mean, if this were Earth, I would say in the lower right-hand corner is a river. Then in the center, just below center, is a plume of industrial smoke coming off a site, maybe a paper mill. And then you get up on this ridge, and it could be snow. It could be a hugely illuminated strip mine. It could be, it doesn't seem to be flat, but perhaps with these kinds of technology and spaceships, you don't need an airport or a runway. You don't need a flat area. And to me, that looks like it's illuminated. I mean, look at the difference in the brightness of those areas there, which is sort of a diagonal from the middle of the left side to the top, the middle of the top side. There's this diagonal of highly illuminated areas. What is that? And again, if you look just a third of the way up on the left side, you see another blueberry. Is that something floating in space, or is that a perfect a circular crater with ice in it?
Well,
you know, and you said the other one looked like a sphere floating in space. No, it doesn't.
The other one looks like a canister with antennas on it, like the old Telstar.
Right, right. And this one has got shading. I mean, if you dropped a BB on a table and looked at the shading of it, it would be the same, except this is blue. It's got, you know, and then it's shaded in the lower right-hand side. So obviously the light is coming from the upper left-hand corner, but yet these things, these bright areas seem to be self-illuminated. So it appears to be, I mean, this is what I say, that clearly it looks like the Moon is heavily industrialized. There's stuff going on there right now. It's with a science that we can only imagine. And maybe the United States got there once and put up a building and put some people in it for a while, and it didn't work out. The rumor is they weren't happy. They were all told they were doing a great job, and then they were executed, and not a single one of them came back. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm mentioning it because there are all these stories that have been going on for 30, 40 years that this is what's been happening. So, you know, how do they do that? Do they get like 100 soldiers in a room and they get a hypnotist to stand up in front of them and put them all into a light trance? Then, let's say there's 60 of them that are not put into a light trance. They dismiss them. Then the other 40, they meet with them individually and see if they can be put into a deeper trance. Then they find out if they don't have any family or loved ones, if they're single people, maybe solitary. And those would be the ideal candidates. And then they see if they can take a deep hypnotic programming. And then they sign them up to be a crew on a spaceship operating out of the Moon or Mars. I mean, where would they get these people? And then there have been a few cases where people said, you know, they were asked, well, where did you, you were in the Navy. Yes, I was. Well, where were you stationed? I was stationed at the Great Lakes Naval Base. What did you do? Well, I don't really remember. Do you mind if we hypnotize you? No, I'd love to know exactly what I did. And then they're hypnotized and they say, well, I was stationed on a spaceship that was based out of Mars. Well, there are several of these case histories on the internet that I personally have read. And, you know, there reaches a point where all of it can't be made up. And even if 5% of it is true, that's 1,000% more than NASA has ever hinted, or the government, or any of these people that say, well, yes, we're still looking for life. Yes, you know, we're going to see if there's any methane. And, you know, it's just a joke. It's a joke, Kevin. And pictures like this create enough questions. I mean, if there was an atmosphere, that object in the center at the bottom that seems to be maybe a paper mill, it's a misty evening and there's dew in the air and those are spotlights pointing up into space. I mean, I don't know. Is that where something fell off the ridge and they've been dumping debris? They call that overburden. So when they go after an ore like gold, then they cut off all the stuff that they don't want that's in their way, and they process the ore and they dump everything off the side of the mountain. And is that why there's sort of like a stream coming from that going down towards the lower right? So there's just too many questions. And I have a picture of a crater on Mars where there's a golf ball in the crater, and it's probably 1,000 feet in diameter, and it looks like a U.S. Air Force radar dome.
Yeah, I've seen that. So, I want to get to the dark twin, and then we're going to open up the telephone lines.
Okay.
Because you've mentioned within the past few minutes a couple of times this dark twin, and the picture that our viewers are getting is a picture of the Neumeier Station on Antarctica. It's a black and white picture. This is from their webcam. And we see, I presume, the sun, and we see a little white dot off away from the sun. Describe this for us. What are we looking at here, Gordon?
Okay. You have to understand that each country, no one country owns the Antarctic, but they all have agreed to have their own Antarctic stations. And this is the German Antarctic station, and it's called Neumeier after one of their explorers. And it's Neumeier 3 because... as always happens in the Antarctic, the ice and snow bury the first two buildings. So they finally wised up, followed the example of the United States station at McMurdo Sound, and they put the building on stilts, which gives it extra lifetime. So then they have, off at a distance, a radar dome, which they call a radome. And on the radome, they have a webcam. And the webcam points back at the station. And they have a wide-angle view and a narrow-angle view. And I actually enlarged this a little bit and cut out the rest of it to focus on this object that's in the sky. And the thing is that the radar dome is south of the building. So what it captures is the sun rises on from the right-hand side, goes up into the sky in the middle, and then sets over to the left-hand side. And the right-hand side of this picture is east. The center of the picture is north because they're on the South Pole. And to see the sun or the moon, you have to look north. Just the way in the northern hemisphere, to see the sun or moon, you have to look to the south. So this is on the south side of Neumeier Station, looking back at the station. And this object has been filmed many, many times for years. And I had brought this up with the Zetas, with Nancy Leader, and she's like, oh no, you know, that's the moon, blah, blah, blah. And then my dear friend, Robert Pepino, who I respect immensely, he sent me this picture, not this particular one, but one from April 9th. Well, it happened that I had been outside on April 9th looking at the full moon. And he said, what is this? And I looked at it and I go, well, I know damn well it isn't the full moon, because the full moon, the whole face of it is completely lit up brightly. And I know it wasn't the sun because, you know, the sun doesn't look like a disc like that. And of course, there has been a story, and the only two groups in the history of the world have ever mentioned the dark twin of Earth. So what that is a planet the same size as Earth that orbits the sun on the opposite side of the sun, so we never see it. And, of course, you can go through any prophecy, all the prophecies, you can go through any material, and believe me, I have. There is not one single mention of the dark twin of Earth in any literature by anyone, no matter how psychic they are, no matter how they're talking about they channel extraterrestrials, or no matter what they say, nobody has ever mentioned the dark twin of Earth, except for two groups. And the first group is the Hopi Indians. And that's remarkable because they don't say the dark twin of Earth. But let me explain.
Before you go any further, let me ask for clarification about this picture. Okay, we see a big sphere.
That's it, the dark twin of Earth.
Okay, now what's that little white dot way out there?
One of the planets, like Venus or...
Okay, so how do you know that's not the sun?
Oh, because it's night, first of all. Because you can see the lights on in the Neumayer station. This is twilight time right here.
Okay.
Okay. So see, there's a lot to this, but basically there is a planet on the other side of the sun normally, which is not there anymore, and the reason why is because of Planet X. But it is the same size as Earth. It's a volcanic cinder. It has no oceans, no moisture, no atmosphere, no life, and no vegetation, and it's just a black globe, and it, because it's volcanic, it's sort of like black pumice. It reflects sometimes a bluish light and sometimes a golden light.
Okay, so how do you know, since we never see this and nobody ever writes about it, channelers never talk about it, how do you know about the conditions being volcanic and no life, no vegetation? How do you know that?
Well, this is directly from Nancy Leader and Zeta Talk. They're the other group that talked about it, and the only other group that talked about it.
Okay.
And they say that this is one of the planets that the Anunnaki are mining for gold. That place is loaded with gold. It was a lot easier to create us as slaves and have us mine the gold for them. But seeing as how they're not allowed to come back to Earth anymore, they're very happy to mine gold on the moon of Mars called Phobos, which they've just tunneled away on the inside of it. And that's why Richard Hoagland says that he thinks Phobos is a space station, because they've studied Phobos with ground-penetrating radar, but he doesn't realize it's really gold mines. And the other place is the dark twin of Earth is one giant nugget of gold in all that volcanic lava. So normally it would be on the other side of the sun. So the very first time, once again we get to the NASA lies, the very first time that NASA sent up a spaceship and they got away from the Earth, they must have seen this planet on the other side of the sun. And yet not one single word about it, okay? Now, because it reflects a faint bluish light, and the prophecy is for Planet X to cause pole shift, the Hopi prophecy is when the blue kachina is seen in the sky as the same time as the red kachina, that's the end of the age. So this, the dark twin of Earth, which has a bluish color, this webcam switches to black and white at night, but you can go to the Neumayer station webcam and you can look at these images. They take one every 10 minutes or whatever, half an hour. And then they play them back as a movie. So you can look up on Google, Neumayer Station. They have a list of all these different webcams, but you look for the one that's got an image of the station, just like this. And that's the one you select. And then you can select whether you want to look at the latest picture or you want to see the last 24 hours worth of pictures. And if you select that, you will actually get a movie where it's a series of stills in quick succession. I think it's 144 stills are played through. So when Robert, I had brought this up with the Zetas and Nancy before, and I said, look, I think the dark twin is being photographed at Neumayer. And she's like, oh no, that, you know, it's the moon. But then when Robert sent me the one from April 9th and I sent it to Zetas, she goes, oh no, that's the moon. I said, no, it's not, because the full moon looks the same whether you're in the Antarctic or in Maine. And on April 9th, it was a fully lit face of the full moon. So this is not the moon.
And you're saying that because this one has mostly a shadow across it.
Right, and you can see there's no detail like the moon has, craters and what they call the mare, the seas, and the craters, and you know the moon even as much of it as you can ever see, you always see the craters. So even if it's just a crescent, you can see craters in that. And so finally, Nancy asked the Zetas, "Is this the dark twin?" And they said, "Yes, it is." And now, I've said before, and people can go into the archives and listen to the other shows where I've explained why I say that gravity pushes and it doesn't pull. So the planet X is coming into the solar system going clockwise. The dark twin, Venus, and Earth are trying to go counterclockwise. So first, planet X came around from the back of the sun, and the Earth stopped in its orbit, and planet X stopped in its orbit. Then Venus caught up and got blocked by planet X.
How do you know it got stopped?
Well, because we're not rotating around the sun anymore since 2003.
Whoa, wait a minute. We're not in orbit around the sun?
We're hanging in space and slowly drifting a little bit around the sun, and the sun, of course, on its own turns, and we on our own turn, but we are not rotating as we normally do through space. Exactly.
How do you know that?
Well, I figured out in the late 70s that gravity pushes and it doesn't pull. And recently there were two news stories that absolutely blow the cover off that. I, first of all, in 1988 or 89, called the foremost gravity researcher on Earth, Dr. Ephraim Fishbach at Purdue University, and I had a 3 or 4 hour conversation with him. And he said he had discovered a mysterious fifth force of gravity which pushes, and the first four forces pull. So I said, look, I've been studying saucers, I've been on saucers, I've been trying to figure out what I'm looking at and how this works, and people say anti-gravity. I don't believe there's such a thing as anti-gravity. There's gravity and more gravity, just like there isn't anti-light or anti-radio waves or anti-sound. He said, Gordon, you may very well be right. I said, well, is there a single experiment ever performed in the history of the world that distinguishes whether gravity pushes or pulls? And he says, no, there isn't. He goes, if you could devise such an experiment, you would be one of the most scientists. It took us 1,000 years. And
somebody messed with your audio again. He said, if you could devise such an experiment, you would be one of the most what?
Famous scientists to ever have lived in the last 1,000 years.
Wow.
So
okay, we have to take a break.
No, let me.
No, we got to take a break, and we will be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Gordon Gianinotto, and we're talking at the moment about this dark twin of Earth. And Gordon, I had to cut you off. Our breaks aren't optional. When they take over, they take over, and they cut us off. So well, I apologize for having to cut you off in mid-sentence and mid-thought, but no choice. All right, go ahead and complete your thought there, and we're going to open the phone lines for the audience.
You see, this is important because you can't understand why there would be a planet hovering at the South Pole of Earth. What the hell is it doing there? It's not the sun, and it's not the moon, so what is it? So I'm trying to explain briefly how it's possible for this to happen, and there are two proofs that came out recently that gravity pushes. The first is, you realize that if gravity pulls, that when the Big Bang happened, there should be an initial explosion and everything should go outward. As it goes outward, it should slow down, stop, and then start collapsing. And eventually it would collapse. So if the universe is, let's say, 16 billion years old now, let's say it's going to stop, and then it takes 16 billion years to go back to another Big Bang and do it all over again.
Yeah. So expansion and then contraction.
Right. Well, that's a lie. That's untrue. 2 months ago, all of the astrophysicists in the world announced together in agreement that, and now you've got to listen to all these words in this phrase, the rate of acceleration of the expansion of the universe is increasing. The rate of the expansion of the universe is increasing. So it isn't that there was an initial pulse from the Big Bang and that's what's causing things to get farther and farther apart and they're going to stop getting farther apart and then start getting closer together. Instead, they're getting farther apart even faster than they were before. Now, the only thing that explains that is that gravity pushes. And the second news story that came out recently, and this was the subject of a press conference, and the first question asked was gave away the answer. The press conference was to announce that a black hole had been found which spit out two blue stars. So the first question the first reporter listening to this press conference said was, oh, are the blue stars, is there any danger they're going to hit the Earth? And the scientist said, oh no, they're pointed in another way, we'll never see them again. But I ask you, if a black hole is an ultimate vacuum because its gravity sucks in and pulls, then what the hell is it doing spitting out blue stars? So the excuse me. Those two news stories by themselves prove that gravity pushes and doesn't pull. So that explains why there's not going to be a collision between the dark twin of Earth, between Venus and the Earth, between Venus and the dark twin, or between any of the three, Earth, dark twin, or Venus, and planet X. This is why you never heard of astronomers meeting and saying, we've got to do something about this terrible problem of planets colliding. And you've never heard of meetings being called saying, we've got to do something about this terrible problem of stars colliding. And people have always looked at the Milky Way at a strange angle in the sky. Now,
Let me say to our caller, hang on, we'll get to you in just a moment. Gordon, you need to wrap up your thoughts so we can get to the phones.
Okay. Now, people, you are aware the sun rises in the east, goes up a certain angle, and then sets in the west. That angle at maximum is 23 degrees. But people all from the beginning of time have always looked up at the Milky Way, and the Milky Way is not at an angle of 23 degrees. The Milky Way is looking back towards the center of the universe, and it goes at a really strange angle. Well, 2 years ago or 4 years ago, they just discovered that the Earth is not actually in the Milky Way. It's in this galaxy called the Sagittarius Galaxy, which is colliding with the Milky Way. But when you look up at the sky, do you see stars colliding? Do you see planets colliding? No, you don't. And so that's why the Milky Way is not at a 23-degree angle, because the whole solar system's like a pancake. So the dark twin of Earth came around, was behind the sun and opposite the Earth stopped, and then the dark twin of Earth caught up with it. And that's what it's doing there. And there's only two people that have ever described that, and one is explicitly in plain English, ZetaTalk.com, and the other is the Hopis in code by saying, when you see the blue kachina in the sky with the red kachina, that's the end of the age. So,
all right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi, Mr. Jun Ayanoto. My question to you is, these pictures of the moon are nice, but you know, we have satellite pictures of Area 51, and that's a no-zone flyover, I'm sure. But yet we got these Russian photographs showing detailed buildings, instead of having a rover contest where they're sending up 50 rovers, wouldn't it be easier just to send up a spy satellite light to circle the moon and give us clear pictures?
Well, they have. I mean, that's the thing. You see, the Chinese have so many important things on their mind that they have to attend to that they're neither announcing UFOs or alien structures or extraterrestrials, nor are they going to cover them up. They're just taking pictures and releasing them. And you can go to the Chinese site, and their photographs of the moon and other things will blow your mind, because NASA won't show you something if it reveals they're lying. But the Chinese don't care if their pictures prove NASA's lying. And the same's true with the European Space Agency. I mean, how many color pictures have you seen of Mars? And yet the European Space Agency, the first pictures of Mars showed vast areas of green. Green. That means living, growing things on the surface producing methane. So, yeah, I mean, space satellites are wonderful, but now I'm telling you, there's going to be 23 rovers on the moon. There's one the size of an elephant on Mars now. And they could have landed it in Cydonia, where there's pyramids and a pyramid complex and a face on Mars, but no. They put it out in the Willy Wags on some crater that has what they call an interesting mountain. So, okay, fine, you know, that's what they're doing. But the point is, I guarantee you that one or all of these rovers are going to say, oh, we found life, and oh, we found extraterrestrials.
Well, there's also this, and that is science follows the money.
Exactly.
And the X Prize, the guy who put up the money for the X Prize, that's who said rovers, that's who said here's the things those rovers have to do in order to win the X Prize.
And it's $20 million.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've made money all my whole life taking pictures for newspapers and working for news services. And I mean, I would get an idea and go to the New York Times or the Washington Post or the LA Times and say, I'd like to interview this person, and I'll take the pictures, you give me a writer. And you know, things like that, where I would just take a picture and they would buy it. So you know, I never got sent out like a staff photographer to go take pictures they told me to take. I only took pictures I wanted to take. But the thing
well,
is,
I'm going to have to go to the Chinese website and see for myself. One last thing, you said about the dark twin causing a wobble. If that was true, why would I look up and see the constellations at night, and yet the next night, you know, the correct ones are still there? Why wouldn't they change?
They do. It's the Earth wobble, not the dark twin is not wobbling, and the Earth is wobbling because of Planet X, and that by itself is a subject for a whole additional show with Kevin, which I'd be glad to do if he's interested. And
well,
that's happening. It's repeating every single day. I mean, I live in Maine, on the coast of Maine. I feel like I've been living in a rainforest. We had 3/4 of a year's worth of rain in 6 weeks, and they've had 3 crops of hay, and all the corn is doing wonderfully, and the rest of the country is in a drought. And if you go to the East Atlantic, it's been raining like hell on the Atlantic coast, and you go inland and there's a drought. Then you go to China and there's massive rains, and Canada can't be expected to feed the whole world this winter. So we're going to have massive chaos. But this is not some random thing. This is repeating every single day, and it's making the jet stream go into giant loops. So basically that's what the wobble is doing. It's going to become worse. We're going to see stranger weather. We've seen strange weather. You haven't seen anything yet. And
so you're saying this is not man-made, like Harper weather modification?
No. Listen, to do all the things that people say HARP would do, you would have to have all of Alaska, every square inch of it, be nuclear reactors. It's just not possible. There are a lot of secret things they're trying to do with HARP, and there's things they've done with HARP, but there's nothing that can affect the whole world 24 hours a day unless they built 3,000 new giant nuclear reactors to power it.
Well, thank you for being a guest, and Kevin, thank you for taking my call.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Jerome.
623-444-5889. And we have Lucas from the UK with a flash message. Before I read it, let me tell you that, folks, if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can send a flash message. If you're in the USA or Canada, give us a call. Lucas in the UK says, I'm with you on the pictures of the moon, but you lost me completely when you started talking Zeta. I can't buy it. So that's his comment.
Well, you know, I have this every day, and I say if everybody liked what I had to say, or everybody even liked me, if I woke up in the morning tomorrow and everybody liked me and what I have to say, then I would think I woke up in the Twilight Zone.
Okay,
so
fair
I
enough.
Realize that people can have their own opinions over whether there's extraterrestrials, and if so, who are they, and if so, can you believe what if there's a human in contact with them, what they say. And I understand that completely, but Janet and I have been lecturing on extraterrestrials and all of these subjects, including pole shift, since 1990 together. And around 2006, I said to Janet, let's look at some of these websites and see if anybody is saying the same thing we're saying. And I looked at Zeta Talk and I went, oh my God, they're saying exactly the same thing, practically word for word of lectures that I've given. And
okay.
I started
enough.
Following them and reading them, and then I started calling Nancy Leader and writing her, and I've established a great relationship with her. I'm not some cult member. I don't pay any money. She's a poor woman in Wisconsin that's written out 39,000 pages of questions from the public and the answers that the Zetas have given. And if you would just spend the time you spent complaining about that, if you would spend it reading it, it would open your eyes and blow your socks off, and you'd never find your socks again. I guarantee it.
Okay, to the telephone caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, listen, thank you so much for airing all that Jose Escamilla footage. I tell you, if this were the best of all possible worlds, Jose would be sitting pretty right now, because that is one amazing movie that he put together.
So you've seen it?
The entire production, everything from the video to the audio to the graphics, the whole thing. This is something that should be playing in every IMAX theater. It should be playing at the Coca-Cola Space Science Center. It should be airing in every science class in every grade school, middle school, high school in this country, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Stephen, you're going to have to hang on. We have a break taking over. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, where we are talking with Gordon Gianinotto, and we have on the telephone with us Stephen from Georgia. Are you still with us, Steve?
I'm still here, Kevin.
All right. We had to cut you off in mid-breath there, so go ahead.
The pictures of that resembled mountains of gold on the surface of the moon remind me of Dahlonega in North Georgia is a town. It used to, at one time, it was the capital of the state of Georgia, and Dahlonega is the branch of the Cherokee Indians that lived up there. The name Dahlonega meant city of gold, and in the mountains around Georgia, or Dahlonega, there was lots and lots of gold at one time. It was America's first big gold strike was up that way, and where a lot of the gold was embedded in these white marble white marble veins, and a lot of what I'm looking at up there looks a lot like white marble with brilliant bright lights shining on it, reflecting the lights back. And it's just interesting to me that where you find white marble, you also find gold in certain geologic structures, because that's all over North Georgia. They don't have the gold they used to have. It's pretty well been mined out, but the white marble is still there, and that so resembles that. And that might explain why, you know, our international bankers are so ready to throw away just, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars, you know, without even thinking about it. Maybe they know this stuff is up there, and they'll be able to pay their bills with what they pull off the moon. It would be an interesting thing if that's the case. It sure looks like it to me, Kevin.
Well, you may be right. And, Gordon, you said there is some, there are some writings and some information about that perhaps the Anunnaki kind of stored gold on the moon or something like that, right?
Well, yeah. They would move it to the moon as a way station, and then when Planet X would come through, they would offload it very easily in the 1/6 gravity to get it on Planet X. And then they'd make a fine powder of it and put it in their atmosphere, because their planet is 29,000 miles in diameter. It's got deep oceans and open volcanic rifts, and it's cloudy most of the time. So the volcanic rifts illuminate the clouds like they're red or orange, so people think it's a dwarf star. But it is a planet, and it does get mighty cold when it's not in the solar system, so that's why they would want the gold. And your caller is correct. Gold is found in association with quartz everywhere in the world. And if you find quartz, you're very likely to find gold.
So, well, thank you for taking my call, Kevin, and an excellent show as usual.
All right. Thanks for the call. We are on final approach, ladies and gentlemen. That means we only have a few minutes left, 4 or 5 minutes left here in which we can take a call. And we're racing toward the end of the show. And if you have a question or comment, you need to give us a call. 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hello, Rex.
Hi, Rex.
Hey, Gordon, I was just wondering if there's a twin of Earth directly opposite of us on the sun. I mean, opposite of us on the other side of the sun. How would you be able to see it from any point on Earth? Wouldn't the distance from one side of Earth to the other be infinitesimal compared to looking across to the other side of the sun?
Exactly. That's an excellent question. And nobody would ever know it was there unless you had an agency that sent up space satellites. And your very first satellite, as soon as you got away from the Earth and you could look past the sun, you would see that, in fact, it's just like... if you have like a roulette table and instead of those little slots where the ball falls into, you put some ball bearings in there and you spin it, you will notice they will all balance themselves in equal distances so that the wheel is balanced. And in the same way, for some reason, the dark twin of Earth balances the Earth at this distance from the sun. So I don't know about you, but I would love to know the history of the solar system.
Okay, but I guess I was confused if the picture was taken from Antarctica.
Okay, he doesn't understand. Why can we take a picture of it now?
Okay, because Planet X came in going clockwise around the sun, and the Earth, the dark twin of the Earth, and Venus all go counterclockwise. So as they came along and tried to go past Planet X, Planet X essentially, because gravity pushes, blocked them. So first it blocked the Earth, then it blocked Venus, and then it blocked the dark twin of Earth. So the dark twin of Earth caught up to the Earth in its orbit, and it's now hovering off the south pole of Earth. That's why it's not visible for us in North America.
So basically what you're saying, Gordon, is the solar system is now constipated.
Yes, exactly. So true. And I like to describe it like this. There are other people who have described it as a cup. In other words, there's this force of energy coming off planet X that's like a cup. And in the cup are three planets. Now, the planet X is 29,000 miles in diameter. The Earth is 7,500. The dark twin of Earth is 7,500. And Venus is 7,400. I don't know if people realize how close. It's 94% the size of the Earth. So you've got three, let's call them identical planets, trying to go counterclockwise around the Sun. And planet X is in the same plane of the ecliptic, blocking them. So it's the same as if you've ever owned a dog and it's in a corner and you're trying to catch it. And the dog darts to the left, you dart to the left, then the dog darts to the right and you dart to the right, and an hour later you still have not caught the dog. So that's what's happening right now. And once planet X can escape the solar system, it's going to come close enough to the Earth, 14 million miles, that its north pole, its magnetic field being 23 times the strength of Earth's, is going to grab the Great Atlantic Rift and separate the crust from the core and pull the crust right up over the North Pole and then let go. And when it lets go, the new North Pole will be Recife, Brazil, the eastern tip of Brazil. And that's a disaster that I've talked about on other shows with Kevin. I'm sure he's got them all archived and that mm-hmm. you can go and listen to them. And I suggest that you do that because, you know, I don't want to have to explain the same thing on every show. I like to get into some new things, but in order for the listeners to understand, I had to explain that gravity pushes, it does not pull.
So are the inner planets being absolutely ravished right now then, like Mercury, Venus, and the twin?
No, Mercury is too close to the Sun, and see, we're 93 million miles from the Sun. And right now, if you draw a line between the center of the Earth and the center of the Sun, planet X is on that line but below the Sun. So, and it's 30 million miles from Earth. So it's 63 million miles from the Sun. So Mercury is not having any effect. And actually, I don't even know how you'd measure it on if there were an effect on Mercury. Maybe the melting point on Mercury is 1,000 degrees instead of 800 degrees. I mean, I just don't know. But it's only these inner planets, because then you've got a huge distance to get to Mars. And you see, when you talk about inner planets, when you look towards the Sun, Mercury never gets more than 28 degrees from the Sun as seen from the Earth. And Venus
okay,
never
you've
gets
got 10 seconds.
45 degrees as seen from the Earth. So that's the area, that cone of your view is where planet X is right now, below the Sun.
Okay, I wish we had more time, but we don't. Rex, thanks for the call. We've got to run. The end of the show has arrived. And I want to thank Gordon Gianinotto for being with us again this evening. Tomorrow night, Brooks Agnew is my guest, so you want to be here to hear Dr. Agnew, and it's always interesting when he speaks to us. Gordon, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You? Well, you may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.